Hey guys, before we get rolling here, I just want to thank those of you who have left me a review on iTunes. This helps me keep the podcast free, so please keep them coming. Tell your friends. I also want to thank those guys that have been sending in the questions. This is what this podcast is about. It's about getting you the info that you need to help become a better hunter. Now you can actually go to my website, interviewswiththehuntingmasters.com, and click on the Ask the Pro section. And you can send me your questions there, and you can even suggest a guest. And lastly, before we jump into this episode, I want to shed a little light on one of my sponsors, Sneak Tech Sneak Boots. I've been wearing them now for several years, and they've really upped my stalking game. I'm not a very sneaky person, and I find that extra added stealthiness that they give me has really, really improved my stalk. I believe in them so much that I've decided to give away one pair each month to a lucky subscriber. So if you're a subscriber, once a month, I'm going to be announcing a winner to win a pair of Sneak Tech boots. So go ahead and go check them out at sneaktech.com, and that's SneekTech.com. Let's get to the next episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by theoutdoorinsiders.com and the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. This week, we're going to do a little podcast about elk hunting. We're going to be talking with Corey Jacobson, Elk 101, and we'll talk a little bit about the rut more than anything, I think, because that's what's coming up. It's coming up hot. How you doing, Corey?
I'm doing great. Thanks, John.
Good. Good to hear. So how many hunts you got planned this year?
You know, I've got two primary hunts. We're going to go to Wyoming just on a general tag, mm-hmm. and then come back and hunt here close to home in Idaho. So those are the two primary hunts. And then I've got, you know, I'll be hunting elk with my kids, and we're doing another hunt of a lifetime hunt with a young man who's coming out from Pennsylvania. So we'll get in plenty of elk chasing this fall.
Nice. I was actually considering Idaho was on my radar this year. I'm like, if I don't draw a tag, I'm like, I'm gonna go to Idaho. I haven't been literally since before I got married for elk. I was thinking to myself, of course, my dog's barking in the background over there. I gotta forgive my mangy mutts. Actually, I'm gonna shut this door real quick. Minimize that.
Hey, stupid. Quiet.
All right, that's better. Like I was saying, I buy a license almost every year in Idaho because I put in for sheep and I put in for goat, and I'm like, I'm never gonna draw that, but I keep wasting this $168 bucks every year for no reason, and I'm like, I just need to go. I just need to go to Idaho.
Yeah. So. Yeah, you've got the license, so.
Yeah. There's so my plan is next year. Yeah, there is a ton of over. And, you know, deer too. Like, I got friends that go in November, you know, rifle deer and whatnot. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I need to try that out because it's been so long since I've been there. My main camera guy's from Kamiai.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we, you know, that's why we used to go all the time. We used to kind of plan it, you know, go, and he would end up staying there for a while, like during the holidays. And then, so we haven't gone. I haven't gone in a long time. Last time I was there was for a bear hunt. We went like June or something like that. Yeah. That was literally like right before I got married. So a little over 10 years. Crazy.
Yeah. That was some great whitetail hunting up in the Kamiai area.
Yeah. And you know what? I think what stopped me from going up there is that very next year, or that very same year that I went there for bear, there was like a bad case of blue tongue, and it like wiped out a crap ton of deer. And they were having such problems with the wolves at the time. The elk weren't bugling anymore. And so I was just like, it didn't appeal to me anymore for a while. So then I just kind of got out of the rhythm, you know. So, yeah, but I'd like to give that shot again. Anyhow, I digress. I'm going to run into, I got a couple questions for you. I feel like we get asked a lot of the same stuff over and over again, and I hate to like beat the same thing over the head, but on these early season hunts, because the bulls, I'm gonna say early, let's not say early season. Well, you know what? Let's start with early season, and then we'll kind of go into the rut, because I think early season means pre-rut to me. Because there
Sure.
are plenty of hunts, like myself, I'm going to Utah here in the end of August. They're not going to be running. So let's start with that. The early season hunts, what are some of the things that you're doing to locate an area that you will be hunting? Not necessarily locate the actual bulls, but how are you choosing your hunting spots? Like, say, let's say you had my tag and you were going to go in August in the Manti. What were some of the things that you would be doing?
For sure. No, that's a great question. For me, I love calling, so the early season is definitely not my favorite time to hunt, just because calling isn't as effective. And I'm like you, the early season I consider to be even before the pre-rut. You know, it's kind of the August 15th through September 1st time frame. Like you said, you'll be in Utah, the season's open there. You're mostly going to be spotting and stalking or hunting over water, which water can be effective during that time of year, but to actually find the areas to hunt, I love that preseason, the early season into preseason, because the bulls at that time are kind of separating from their bachelor groups. They've been in bachelor groups all summer, and then they transition to what I call the staging area, and that's kind of the places, the sanctuary they go to. They don't move much. They've got food, water, shelter, everything right there. And they kind of just stage for the rut, and they're by themselves. They're rubbing the velvet off their antlers. So if I was hunting that August 22nd time frame, which I think is when Utah opens, I would be looking for some of those staging areas. And they're going to be not like the late season sanctuaries, but more all they need is some good food and water and cover, and they can find that usually in close proximity. So they aren't traveling a whole bunch. They'll get up and feed in the morning, go bed back down. But one of the things I look for is a bunch of rubs, and they're different than the rubs that you see during the rut. These are the bedroom rubs, where they've got 40 or 50 trees in a 100-foot radius, and every tree in there's rubbed. And if I can find that, I know there's a bull that's living there, and usually those bulls are going to come back into the same areas from year to year.
Yeah, that makes
Yeah, that makes
sense.
sense.
What are some of the landscape features that you look? Obviously, it depends on what state you're hunting and what type of terrain you're hunting. But let's keep with the Utah Manti. You know, it's a, I mean, 10,000 feet, I think, most of it,
Yeah.
Skyline Drive, like that type of, you know, altitude, that type of vegetation and so on. What are some of the things that you're looking for? Like, let's say on a map, say, hey, I'm gonna go look here to see if I can find what you just described to me.
Totally. Yeah, and so I spend a lot of time on Google Earth, and I'm primarily looking for north-facing slopes, especially in that early season. That's going to be the coolest part of the terrain, and the bulls are going to be bedded on that. That's where those benches are going to be. That's where the little sanctuaries and bedrooms are going to be. And if you can find those north-facing slopes that have good cover, maybe an open hillside or a ridge close by that they can go out and feed on and graze on, and then walk right back into that heavy cover where they've got shade all day and it's cooler, usually a spring or something close by. So if I'm on Google Earth, I'm going to be looking primarily on north-facing slopes. I'm going to be trying to identify some water and maybe some feed features. And usually when you start doing it at that level, you can narrow it down to five or six spots that really stand out. And typically you're able to sort of get into elk pretty quickly.
Cool. Yeah, so last year
Yes.
I had the general season deer tag in the same mountain range, and I saw I shouldn't say, I saw a lot of elk. I saw two or three really decent bulls, just, you know, glassing for deer, picked them up, and I kind of made a mental note of it. That's kind of why I put in for that unit, honestly, is I'm like, oh, I'm like, I have it. I looked on Go Hunt, and I'm like, I got a pretty good chance of drawing it, and I made a mental note, and I found that I found the bulls were, a lot of them were in these, like, don't know if it's aspen. I think it's aspen. It might be alder,
Yeah,
but I
they've
think
got
it's
kind of that
aspen.
chaparral
Yeah,
stuff up high there too.
it's kind of like a weird, and I didn't make them, I should have checked to see what kind of tree it was, but like where all the new ones were coming up, you know, I found them in there. The three bigger bulls, and they were by themselves. One was like a 340-ish decent bull, you know, real nice bull, and the other two were, you know, lower 300s, and they were all in, basically in the same. It was like a carbon copy, you know, of but in different basins, different bulls. So yeah, and a lot of it correlated with some of the stuff that you said. You know, there was a creek in each one of those, and a little grassy, you know, grassy bottoms, you know, at the bottom. I noticed too, that was one of the things I saw, that there was some open area. And I imagine a lot of that has to do with too, like you said, they're just at the point where they're coming out of, you know, coming out of velvet, and they were in those areas, you know, just like deer or anything that has velvet, they're tender at that time, and they don't want to be in super thick stuff, you know, hitting their antlers and hurting themselves, you know, while they're still in velvet.
Yeah,
So
and they should
plus
be, you know,
good feed
by
then
that
too.
time, I'd say the 10th to the 15th of August, those bigger bulls should all be rubbed off and, you know, hard
And they're hard
horned.
horned. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, those open areas, they're going to have a lot better feed in some of those meadows, especially if there's a creek in the bottom. You got green grass coming up and a good
Yeah.
feed, good water, good cover right there. So good areas for sure.
Awesome. So let's transition. Basically the same question. Now we're in that pre-rut and rut. How does that differentiate from the way you're looking for them in the early season? What are you looking for now?
You know, really looking for a
Excuse
lot of
me.
the same things. Those staging areas from like the 1st to the 5th of September can be really productive still. The elk will be a little bit more vocal. I hunted Utah, I think 5 years ago, and it's like a light switch comes on. It's just quiet. The bulls aren't making a peep, and then overnight they start vocalizing. And once they start vocalizing, they can be called in. And I love hunting, especially a more mature bull, early during that pre-rut before they get herded up, before they really establish their harems. And so I'm going to be, you know, covering a lot more country and using my bugle to locate elk a little bit more. And obviously I'll walk by some elk that aren't bugling, but I'm doing a lot more calling to locate than glassing at that point. And from
Gotcha.
that 1st to the 5th, you know, you aren't going to hear near as much calling, but if you can get a bull to respond during that time, the chance of calling him in, I think, is a lot higher. And then as you transition from like the 5th to the 15th, still the pre-rut, but they're more in the gathering stage where they're trying to get the harems. The bigger bulls are coming in and starting to establish harems a little bit more. And that's a great time to call as well. I actually like, you know, that 1st half of September better than the 2nd half for being able to effectively call in elk. Once they get herded up and they have their cows and the cows start coming into estrus, calling a herd bull away from a cow in estrus can be pretty difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now let's move to full-blown rut. Full-blown rut, in my opinion, the way I've always treated any rut thing, and that's deer, elk, whatever, I always look for what the cows need and what where the cows are going to be, and kind of look for those areas, because just by default, the boys are going to show up where the girls are hanging out. So, what are some of the things that you're looking for, you know, to find those big cow groups?
That's a great point. And that when I set out trail cameras in the summer, you know, if I'm in a place like Utah or Arizona, I think I'm probably going to be looking more for a bull to hunt. They don't seem to travel as much looking for the cows there, but you get into the mountain states like Montana and Wyoming and Idaho, Colorado, those bulls will travel a long ways. Not saying they won't in the desert states, but if you have bulls on your trail camera in Idaho all summer, they might be 20 miles away when the rut kicks in. So I'm definitely looking for those big groups of cows because, like you said, when the rut starts kicking in, those bulls come looking for those same groups of cows. And if you have them located, that 5th to the 15th time frame as they're assembling their harems, you want to know where the cows are. And for me, you know, like in Idaho, and I'm sure it's the same in the desert states, but I'm just looking for where the cows have had their calves because typically once they have their calves in early to mid-June, and I, you know, I think some of those southern states, they have them a little bit earlier in the year. But where they have their calves, they usually spend the summer there. They've got security and safety and plenty of feed. And that's typically where they're going to spend the summer without moving a whole bunch more. So early in the summer, early July, trail cameras are going to start showing you where the cows are. And then from the 5th to the 15th of September, the bulls are going to be showing up there. Once they establish their harems, a lot of times they'll take them and push them up into a canyon or kind of split them up a little bit. But the cows kind of direct and control everything during the rut.
I was gonna say, yeah, I see that a lot, like where the where I'm getting a little feedback. I see that a lot where you think it's the bull that's pushing, but it's like the lead cow, and she's, hey, let's go this way, and now the bull's just trying to round up the rest of everybody else and make sure that they stay together.
Yeah,
So,
he's running around there thinking he's controlling where they're going. But actually, like you
yeah.
said, the cows are the ones, and they're pretty simple. They come down to feed, and when it's time to go back to the bedding area, the cows are the ones that lead them back to the bedding area, and the bull's just running around there trying to keep control.
Cool.
Cool.
So I want to switch directions here a little bit with the questioning. We're deep in the rut, or the rut's getting going. You know what? Actually, I'm gonna back up. I'm gonna back up because you said you like that little pre-rut, that like week before they actually get going.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the calls that you do. Maybe if you get it, you can show us some of the calling that you do.
Yeah.
And the whys and wins of it.
Totally. Yeah. And so for me, I like that pre-rut. Again, it's different in every state, but really the rut, the peak rut's going to be sometime the
That's summer.
20th or the 30th of September, sometime around that fall equinox. That's what I would consider the peak rut, when the cows are in estrus, the bulls are going crazy, they're breeding, all of that. And the transition going up to that from, the 5th or the 8th of September through the 15th or the 20th, the bulls are really aggressive. They're trying to establish dominance, they're trying to establish the herds. And that's the time that if you want to be effective with calls, to really get aggressive with them, because the bulls will want to fight. They're wanting to come in and steal cows, or they're wanting to protect their cows. And calling can be effective even on bigger herd bulls, just as they're starting to establish those harems. So I like that time frame. My calling sequence and strategies really don't change from season to season as far as pre-rut, peak rut, some of that. And my philosophy is really simple. I don't worry about what the elk are necessarily communicating. I think that they're going to respond to either the emotion, the desire to breed, or the desire to fight. And so I'm trying to trip one of those triggers. And so I always start my calling sequence, once I'm set up, always starts with a cow call. And if that bull's wanting to breed or wanting to grab a cow for his herd, he's going to come in. And if he's hung up, he already has cows, or he's a little bit timid, then I transition into trying to trip the trigger to fight. And every bull elk has that natural tendency, that testosterone's building up for the rut. And if you can say the right thing to them in the right way, it doesn't matter. Little bulls, big bulls, they all, if you can trip that trigger, they'll come in with their eyes rolled back wanting to fight. And so that's kind of my go-to. Backing up just a little bit though, you've got to locate the elk first. And so I use, just a simple location bugle that really, I'm broadcasting it out. I'm just trying to blow a bugle out there that covers all the canyons and the drainages so they can hear it, and hopefully one will respond. And if I'm wanting to call in an elk, I have to have one that will respond, because yeah, you can call in elk and they'll come in quiet, more out of curiosity, but it's so tough. And it's a waiting game. I think it's harder than spotting and stalking when you do that. So I want an elk that's vocal. I want an elk that's fired up. And so I'm going to cover a lot of country, just throwing out location bugles, trying to find an elk that's vocal. And location bugle, the key with it is just holding that high note a little bit longer and letting it really carry out there and echo through the canyon, and then waiting a minute or two to see if you get a response. If nothing, I'll throw out another one. And if I haven't got a response by the second location bugle, the odds of being able to call in any of the elk that are there are pretty low. So I'm moving on up the drainage until I get to another vantage point. And location bugle is just a simple couple octave change. Again, you're just really trying to get that high note to carry out there and echo. And it sounds like this.
How to take off my headphones. I don't want to blow my ears out.
So yeah. Nothing aggressive there at all. It's just a kind of pretty bugle. Mm-hmm. Hit a couple ascending. Of staircase octaves and blow it out there. Once so, I locate an elk. Go ahead, sorry.
What I want to do just for ease of somebody trying to learn how to do that call, do it again, and then let's do a challenge bugle or something, or the other bugles that you use right after to show the comparison so we can like hear it next to each other. That's because that, we're going to talk about it, and then we're going to talk in between, and the brain's going to forget what it sounds like.
Definitely. So let me explain my actual calling sequence once we get set up, and I'll come back and do the location bugle again. And that way it'll be some context for the challenge bugle. So I get a location bugle, or I send out a location bugle and get a response. And then the key from there is not to call anymore. I go quiet and I move in as close to the bull as I can. And, you know, every different unit's going to be different as far as how close you can get. But if I can get inside 100 or 150 yards, I'm pretty confident in my ability to be able to call in that elk. And so I get in close, get set up with good shooting lanes. And I love to hunt with a partner. I love to have a caller back behind and a shooter out in front. Mm-hmm. And in that situation, the caller is just back there trying to really direct that bull into the shooter's lane or the shooting area there. And the way I do that is, as a caller back behind, I always start with a cow call. And there's a reason for it, and I'll explain that. But I start with just a simple cow call. And all I'm trying to do with that cow call is let the bull know there's a cow close by and get a response out of him. And I'm not worried about what kind of response. I just want him to respond and talk back to the cow. And so just a simple cow call. Something like that. Give him one or two of those. Make sure he hears it. And as a caller, I'm totally fine if he knows right where I'm at, because he doesn't know the shooter's set up out in front. And then when that bull responds, I want to immediately hammer him with a challenge bugle. So I want to put everything I have into challenging that bull. And I think this is the key. Rather than worrying about what I'm saying, I'm worried about how I'm saying it. And I want to make sure that as the caller, I'm putting that emotion into it, that I'm truly conveying a message through how I'm bugling. And as a caller, I have to put that into it. I actually have to convey some anger and a challenge to that bull. And it's a short, really aggressive bugle. The key is to hit that high, shrill note and cut it off real aggressively. And the elk know what that means. They're able to feel that emotion in it. So challenge bugle sounds like this. You might want to remove your headphones. So there's a lot of emotion in that. And if you listen, I'll do the location bugle, and then I'll follow it up with the challenge bugle, just so you can see the difference in it. That there's no emotion in the location bugle. All of my emotion goes into that challenge. So here's the location bugle. And then on the contrary, the emotion in the challenge bugle. I don't know if that, you know, if it comes across through the speakers and the audio.
No, it's, I could totally tell the difference. Yeah.
When you're in person, you can tell, and the elk can tell too. And I really feel that's how elk communicate. They communicate through emotion. With cow calls, it's the same. Cows will communicate back and forth, but when they're in estrus and they want to be bred, their cow calls sound different. There's more desperation.
Yeah, more of a whinier.
Yeah, they're conveying to the bull, I'm not just communicating with other cows here. I'm in estrus. I need bread. And those emotions, if you can put those into your calling, go a long ways in being effective as a caller.
Awesome. Now, I get questions about this all the time. I don't personally use them. Oh, I haven't used them for years now, but like chuckles, you know, clunking, all these extra, you seem to be like pretty, this is like, you know, pretty straightforward and let's simple stupid, so to speak.
Yep.
And what's your thoughts on those calls?
Same
I know
thing,
you do. Right? I know you do them in your when you're doing your competitions and stuff, because that's the pretty stuff that everybody wants to hear. But
totally, and I have people all the time. When you're out in the woods hunting and you hear a bugle, it's the chuckles that give it away, whether it's an elk or a hunter. You can fool a lot of people with just a straight bugle, but as soon as you start chuckling, there's very few people that can fool another person, because chuckles are hard. And so I'll have people say all the time, well, I'm just not confident in my calling because my chuckles aren't good. Don't put them in. You don't need them. I really don't feel that chuckles add anything to the effectiveness of calling in an elk. It's all just in that emotion in the challenge sequence. And that's my style, is very aggressive. It's in your face, which I think is the most fun way to call in elk.
Yeah.
But there's other ways too. You can do the blind calling and set up and just sound like a whole herd of elk and throw in some different sounds, and elk will come in silent to check it out. But to actually get a bull to commit where he comes running into your lap looking either for a cow to breed or for a bull to fight, there's not much more exciting when it comes to elk hunting. And so I don't worry about any of those, auxiliary sounds that elk make. The glunking, I might glunk, I might chuckle, but it's just to add some realism to my calling, to maybe convince that elk, if he's a call shy elk where there's a lot of people hunting, I might add a few things that make him think, yeah, that's probably not a human, that sounds like an elk. But as far as tripping that trigger and getting them to come in or communicating to them the message I'm trying to send, I don't think any of those other calls really add anything.
Right. I often wonder, the way you said it just now, if elk actually sit there and think, that guy bugling over there doesn't sound like an elk. what is it that makes them say, hey, I'm not going into that? Like, I don't know if they had that. I mean, I guess if they've gone in a couple of times and, didn't get killed or got whatever because they got called in and then they saw, it's just like calling coyote. Coyote comes running into a call and you bust him. He's probably not coming into that call ever again. But
yeah,
so I it's funny. I often think that when I'm out in the field, I'm like, I wonder if they're not answering me back because I sound like I'm a human. I don't know if that's
you know, even. And I think at the end of season, I think they have short term memory.
Yeah.
I think at the end of season, they get call shy, they get pressured after 3 or 4 weeks of people blowing a lot of different calls at them.
Damn,
but when
mama.
You go back the next season, the first week in the season, I don't think that bull remembers, hey, I was being called at by people here last year. Those first couple of weeks can be really productive. And so I think elk have kind of a short-term memory where for a couple of weeks, they get pressured and they think, okay, I've got to be a little more careful. And obviously as elk get bigger, more mature, they're wiser, they're harder to call in. But I still don't think they correlate that first week or two that, hey, that's a human, there's a lot of human pressure in here, as much as they do at the end of the season.
No, yeah, it makes sense. Cool. Awesome. Is there any other calls that so you got the two bugles and you did a little bit of an estrus, but your first couple of calls were just more like mews and stuff. Is there anything else that you would like suggest that a guy perfect? If you had to learn three calls or four calls, let's say, we know what your two bugles are. What would the other two calls be?
Yeah, and that's part of my strategy, is keeping it simple. Because if you have to learn 10 different calls and you're trying to think, which one do I give them? I'm not confident in these five. Practice three. Practice a simple cow call, the location bugle, and the challenge bugle. And honestly, 99% of my calling is one of those three calls. And from there, there's one bugle. It's called the display bugle. That's the bugle that the bull does to display to the cows that he's the dominant bull. It's not going to be very effective, or at least I haven't had it be very effective, to actually call in elk. But a lot of times if there's a tight-lipped bull that just, I can't break him loose, I can't get him to respond, I need him to start being a little more vocal, I'll do the display bugle. And a lot of times it's kind of like, for me, it's like a shock gobble for turkeys.
Okay.
And a lot of times, you'll cluck and cluck and cluck and a tom won't gobble, and you do a shock gobble and he just hits you right back. It's kind of the same for elk. It's kind of the shock bugle. And it's just the display bugle. It's a full, clean bugle with the lip ball, I call it. Basically, just buzzing your lips in the bugle tube. And so it's going to sound like this.
Mm-hmm.
just gets that buzz sound in the middle of it, and that's how the bulls display. When you hear them, it's that beautiful bugle that you hear out in the meadow.
Right.
It's not coming out of the bull's nostrils. It's not, all, like I said, it's not effective necessarily for calling in bulls, but sometimes it can break them loose and get them to be a little more vocal. And then I can cow call, they'll respond to that, and then I can hammer them with the challenge.
I feel like when I view one, it has more of that sound, not as nice as yours, but I think it sounds more like that. I have like, I don't know if I growl too much when I start and I keep that growl.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got to figure it out because I got really used to using a Fox Pro out here in Arizona because we're allowed to use them. And now, you know, I go to get, I finally draw out of state tags and then I can't use them. So I gotta go back to the roots.
Start practicing the calls. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a while. So, but yeah, no, cool. Oh, that's all good information. And I want to thank you for coming on. Where can our listeners, you know, find out more about you and what you got going on?
Yeah, they can just visit us at the website at elk101.com or follow us on social media. We've got Instagram, Facebook, just elk101. And, you know, on the website, we're still doing the University of Elk Hunting online course and walking people through start to finish on every aspect of elk hunting.
Cool. What are some of the other features on that on the website?
You know, on Elk 101, we've got anything that you can think of elk related. So educational, entertainment, everything there from fitness and calling tactics to scouting, videos on, you know, how to build an archery target all the way through calling tips and tactics. So anything you can think of or dream about when it comes to elk hunting, you should be able to find it at Elk 101.
Sweet. Well, thank you very much. And we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, George.